And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to a Monday edition of The Low Post podcast, where it is honestly almost hard to believe how much the NBA has been flipped on its ear in 96 hours. The dynasty that has ruled the league for a half decade has ended. Well, maybe not ended, but it sits in devastation after an unprecedented 1-2 punch of injuries that just has them gutted. I mean, the Warriors are just gutted. And as soon as you are realizing that the Warriors are not going to be a title contender next season and what that does to the entire landscape of the league, it's completely wide open in a way that we haven't even seen before. And we don't even know what Kawhi Leonard's going to do and Kyrie Irving's going to do and blah, blah, blah. Bam! The Pelicans trade Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers after a gazillion years of public flirtation. And there's just a lot to sort out, and I can't think of anyone better to sort it out with than Kevin Arnovitz, who's going to be joining us now from the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. K.A., are you reeling, man? This is crazy. When Clay went down in game six, it was one of those things where it's just like a lot of the Warriors guys hung around after game six, and we're all on the floor kind of talking to each other, talking to loved ones, and the vibe was just, I think some of them were coming back from some private tears. They were just completely gutted, and they did not care that they had lost the finals. And then this happens. Like, this has been a crazy series of events. Have you recovered? Are you ready to assess going forward?
I'm ready to assess.
Okay. Well, let's start with Anthony Davis. The bounty for the Pelicans: Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, the fourth pick. Boy, I might get this wrong because there are just so many damn things. The Lakers' 2021 pick, if it falls in the top eight, and if not, their 2022 pick unprotected. Unprotected rights to swap picks with the Lakers in 2023. First round picks, that is. The unprotected Lakers pick in 2024 when LeBron will be turning 40 with the option. And this is interesting. They presumably have to agree on a date by which the Pelicans have to do this. It's been very rare that this has happened in the league with any picks, and extremely rare with first round picks, with the option to say, okay, we don't like where that 2024 pick is going to be in the draft, so we're going to kick that to 2025, also unprotected. The Lakers, of course, get Anthony Davis. Initial takeaways, Kevin Arnovitz, go ahead.
So my first initial takeaway is this is a really interesting expression of identity by the Lakers, right? So for the past several years, the Lakers have been engaged in this very conventional rebuild, right? This is what you do in basketball. You have, like, stars retire, and you lose a lot of games, and every year you pick pretty high, and you accumulate this young core, and you grow together, and you fail together, and the hope is you become really good, or pretty good, and yet still have the assets and financial flexibility to get better, or aggregate assets to trade for somebody who's more reliable and older. And with this kind of, in 49 weeks, with the acquisition of LeBron James and then Anthony Davis, the Lakers said, that's just not us. You know, we're not a startup. Let's leave it to other teams to sort of try to cobble together a success on the margins. Like, that's not who we are. We stoke the star making machinery, right? Like, we are the Los Angeles Lakers, and we're just not very good at that. Like, that's not where we excel. We go identify stars in their prime and late prime, and sometimes way late prime in past years, and we then sort of let the pieces fall where they may. We are not a startup. We're not a hedge fund, which kind of plays arbitrary. We just go get the most recognizable talent. We get them on our roster, and then we'll worry about the rest of it later. And so with this trade, for the first time in many, many years, the Los Angeles Lakers are sort of the Los Angeles Lakers again. They're sort of for better and for worse, and there's a lot of worse there because I think those other things are really important to be able to do in the league, sort of find value on the margins and turn good young players into better players, because it can help you win. But this, to me, is the Lakers sort of coming back home to their true identity, and it took 5 or 6 or 7 years to do it, but they've done it.
It's amazing that, and I can't remember which whether the Knicks or the Lakers are the losingest team in the league over the last 6 years. I don't really care. It's one of them. They both have been terrible. It's amazing that literally everybody they drafted but Kuzma is gone. everybody. It's not just Hart, Ingram, Ball. It's Russell, Randall, Clarkson, who's not good, but whatever. People were excited about him as a second-round pick. Nance, I'm probably Randall. It's and by the way, there were people in that organization who were like super proud of their draft record, who said, you know, we got Clarkson with a low pick, Nance with a low pick. We like our number two picks, even though they haven't popped the way people expect them to. Randall was, I believe, a seven pick who was a polarizing figure until sort of last year. Ironically, I thought that he was horrendous on defense last year and totally tunnel vision focused on scoring, but people decided he was good again. They're all gone. Every one of them is gone except Kuzma. And now they have this team that is LeBron, AD, Kuzma. And it's interesting that they just, that Kuzma was some sort of, we have to have Kuzma. We can talk about that if you want. And nothing. And you can tell me about Mo Wagner and Bonga and all this. Nothing. They don't have a team, and they're going to have to construct a team. And, obviously, look, I don't want to belabor this, the cap mechanics, but if this deal closes the way the Pelicans want it to close, the Lakers will not have max cap space. All this idea that they're getting Jimmy Butler and Kemba Walker, or maybe even Kyrie on a reunion, and or Kawhi or something, like, they're not getting those guys unless the Pelicans relent on something they don't have to relent from, which means you might have to actually send them another thing to get them to do that. And then you are left with, let's say, $23 million in cap space or some such thing to split among two guys, three guys. Once you start splitting it among three guys, you're going to the Garrett Temple and below portion of the free agency pool. You're not getting the Nikola Mirotic, probably not Patrick Beverley, certainly not Malcolm Brogdon portion of the free agency pool. And like, you want to just say, well, they have LeBron and AD, it doesn't matter. Well, yeah, you actually need a team. You need like a team of guys, of human beings who can walk and throw the ball in the basket. We just saw the Warriors. Now, even with all their injuries, well, even when Durant was injured, they still had three all-star players, three all-NBA players. And all we could talk about was how bad their depth looked because they had no avenues to get depth. And the Lakers have limited avenues to get depth. So that's going to be interesting. But let's zoom out. LeBron and AD, what do you think of them together? And let's assume the opposite of what happened last summer happens. Let's assume the Lakers actually make good decisions on the margins and not like comically bad, absurd on their face, immediately in the moment, stupid decisions on the margins, and fill out the roster like 80% optimal, like the best they can. How good is this team? Are they an immediate title contender?
I mean, I think they're really, really good. I had Anthony Davis as my preseason MVP pick last season. And, you know, a healthy AD who plays in excess of, you know, 68 games is a top five player. I mean, if I told you Anthony Davis is going to play 68 to 72 games on a very competitive team, where will he be ranked in the MVP voting next year? I mean, what would you say?
Top five. And by the way, that's what he's played. He's been, you know, there's this idea that Anthony Davis is injury prone, and he was until 3 years ago. He's been healthy the last 3 years. Yeah. Now, like, injury prone can start, all it takes is one injury to recycle that same problem. But the idea that Anthony Davis is like brittle and waiting to break has not been really true for a long time now.
Yeah, and he is just, I think it's a wonderful pairing, because in LeBron you have, in terms of vision and playmaking, I mean, one of the great initiators of all time. And, I mean, is Davis is among, I mean, one of the great finishers. And that's a really interesting combination. Now the downside, I would say, is, you know, I mean, all the downside is, hey, it's still a perimeter league. You actually want two initiators, not one and one. You know, it's hard to win with bigs. I don't think of Davis, though, as a conventional big. Like, it's a great pairing. I mean, what is he, 26?
Just turned 20. He's 26 and not 100 days old yet.
Yeah, and one of the five best defensive players in the league. I don't even think that's debatable. I mean, everything's debatable. But I love the pairing. And again, I'm reserving judgment on what else can the Lakers do. I mean, as you say, it tell me what else they have. Tell me how disciplined they are in sort of filling out the roster. Tell me how much confidence they have in sort of the environment to make, you know, marginal players better, good players, great, great players, amazing. I mean, that's always, to me, you know, when people, you know, wax about sort of, you know, the Spurs of six, 7 years ago or really great teams, it's just like, I think with makes them great is not just the championship core. It's just like you can get really flawed basketball players. Because guess what? You don't have a lot of money left over when you have two max guys on the books. Right? You just don't. Like by definition, you are now going to select from a menu of very flawed basketball players. Danny Green, I am a huge Danny Green fan. He was on my all-defensive second team this year. The man can't dribble. Okay? So
as witnessed at the end of Game 6, I can't tell you the shrieking internally that happened on press row and among Raptors fans when Danny Green caught the ball at half court on the sideline with Draymond Green on him and like 11 seconds left. The entire arena knew exactly what was about to happen, which was not good for Toronto.
So again, and I think that's sort of the organizational thing. I mean, again, I like that the Lakers are now true to their identity. We're tired of slumming. We're the Los Angeles Lakers. We don't need to do this sort of deliberate rebuild and have everybody nitpick Zubat's trades. And, you know, we're the frigging Lakers. And I applaud them for a moment of self-awareness of this is who we are and this is who we aren't. But you still have to do the aren't things. You still have to go find flawed players, have, you know, acknowledge those flaws, create systems that and attenuate those flaws and maximize the good things they do, and hopefully one of those things is shooting, which is really important. But by the way, you pay for shooting in this league now,
and I love
the pairing. Who doesn't love the pairing? The pairing.
You always read like, oh, you know, you need to go out and get some shooting. You need to find a wing who can shoot and play defense. Like, okay, where? Who is available?
So this is always the Ed Stefanski comment, you know, in Memphis, right? Like, that was the thing with the Grizz, right? They were always just like a shooter away. They had no shooting on the wings, right? Other than Conley before, you know, Gasol started getting stretchy or whatever. And you know, they were very aware of this deficiency, right? Like, they're in this market that guys don't necessarily want to play in, all things being equal. And I was sort of the famous, I mean, I think it was Stefanski in my piece who said, yeah, we know we need a no shooter like that. Like, we're very aware of that. Like, we know, and it's just hard to get those guys. There aren't, I mean, how many players in the league at less than 12, at less than $15 million a year can give you starters minutes, deliver 39% from three, play in the top 60th percentile or 40th percentile of defense? Like, there just aren't that many guys. You start, like, looking at this, like, I'm opening my best free agents on the market list, and it's like, well... Yeah, Jeremy.
JJ Redick.
You know, like, I mean, it's like all of a sudden, you know.
JJ Redick has made, what did he make this past year? 13, and the year before was 20. I may be wrong a lot is the answer. And like, he's a shooter and he's not helping you tremendously on defense, although he's in the right place and all the things that people say about JJ Redick's defense. JJ Redick made 12.25 last year and like 20 the year before. Like, if you get a guy in that price range, if you're the Lakers, that's kind of it. Like you all after that, you got one more slot for like a $7 million guy. And then the room exception, which is no great shakes. Like it's not. And what's interesting about this trade going forward. Now, again, we'll see. Maybe the Pelicans cooperate and the Lakers all of a sudden have a third max slot. And we can talk about whether that's a better outcome for them than having, you know, two or three decent players. By trading all these picks and acquiring a second max player, and especially so if they acquire a third, the Lakers have, like, no way to improve their team via trade. Like, all the stuff you trade is gone. Almost all of it. I mean, they'll hit a draft here and there where they own their pick and can trade it, but very little trade maneuverability. And if you have guys who are max salary players, those guys are very hard to trade for anything like equal return. And even if you just have a year from right now, even if you just have LeBron, AD, and Kuzma, and that's it. 9 empty roster spots. You do not have max room next summer. And then the following year is the last year of Kuzma's rookie deal, which means he either gets expensive or gets traded. Like, building the team around LeBron and AD is going to be a very fascinating challenge. And we keep, like, I'm reading things about the Warriors, like, what do the Warriors need to do now? Kevin O'Connor had a great piece today, and it's like, well, they need to find a DeJounte Murray, or they may need to make a Kawhi Leonard trade, or they need to draft really good players in the late 20s. Those are anomalous events. That's like saying, I don't know what it's like saying. It's like saying you need to go find a shooter for nothing. Like those are anomalous events. They're very hard to do. The hard reality of contending over a very long time in the NBA is you have to do them. There is no choice. Right. I know they're anomalous events. I know they're hard. You need to make them happen. And only the best front offices and or the luckiest make them happen. And there is zero evidence that the Lakers front office is that sort of front office.
Yeah, that's my concern. We are in a guard and perimeter oriented league, and now you have a very constrained budget to go fill out a backcourt from scratch. Recognizing that LeBron James is, you know, effectively a point guard, you have to go find four guards who can play in excess of 20 minutes, arguably.
Guards help. Turns out you need guards on your team.
Yeah, you need guards in this league. And by the way, my answer is I appreciate I appreciate that the trades can be evaluated on their face, but to me, you know, a single transaction is always part of a larger constellation of moves, right? Like, I think this is a trade that helps both teams immensely, right? Like, it does. Like, the Lakers have decided what they want to do, which is we're a team that wants to win a championship at LeBron James's late prime. We're not a team that wants to contend for the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, theoretically we do, but we're not going to program ourselves that way. And so in that respect, like, they've decided what they are as a basketball team. We are no longer a youth factory that is going to grow together as a core. We have custodian stars who preside, and that's what we do. And in that respect, they've done great. They got one of the two or three best players in this league under the age of 27.
Let's be clear what they have. Let's be clear what they have and why, despite all of these things about building the roster, why I'm optimistic about the Lakers. This is the best pairing of players in the NBA. Immediately. There is complete synergy between them. They are a pick-and-roll ball handler and a pick-and-roll screener at heart. Now, you can tell me about, well, maybe teams will switch and this and that, as they did the LeBron-Kevin Love thing, fight, whatever. There is no – even Stephen Durant, as synergistic as they are because of their shooting ability and Steph's inability to play off the ball, they are not as symbiotic as LeBron and Anthony Davis on both ends of the floor, because God knows LeBron needs someone to help him on defense because he doesn't try until this team's basically facing elimination. And what you said about a big man's league really strikes me about AD. It's really hard to be the initiator of a championship level offense as a big man. Jokic, maybe one day we'll get there, and he's only the greatest passing big man of all time. I'm not sure that Embiid and Towns, as amazing as they are in the post, given the way teams can guard the post now, can quite get to that level without another top five, top 10 level teammate. Anthony Davis is in that boat where, he's improved his face-up game. He can attack from the triple threat position, but he wants to take one dribble and lay the ball up and in. He's not a creator in that
space. Not a playmaker.
60% of his basket, although he averaged 4 assists a game last year, very quietly, 60% of his baskets came via assist last season. He's still more of a finisher than a starter. This is what I wrote in my column. With Anthony Davis in the role he had in New Orleans, where he was kind of the number one option a lot of time, you can be a nice team, you can make the playoffs, you can have success. With Anthony Davis in this role, in a proper role, where he is essentially a secondary player on offense, you win championships that way. And this is immediately the best pairing of two players in the NBA. And one last thing before I let you agree or disagree. One of my great hopes for next season is that LeBron has been sitting around listening to the debate on who the best player in the NBA is and how it's passed him by, and it's Kawhi or it's Giannis or maybe it's Steph and this and that, and has one last FU. Oh, y'all forgot? You forgot who held that title? And I just got, this is the spring and summer off to rest my body. And I'm going to be third all time in minutes by the end of next season. Like, I'm getting up there. It's true. But you forgot. And I'm hoping he has one last, no, it's still me season left in him, because that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we are going, and just an idle prediction, and I don't know. And again, I don't even know the extent of to which, LeBron's body hurt last year, but he has never in his life come into an opening night with the ability to say, I basically just got 7.5 months away from the highest intensity basketball. Like, I have not, I don't believe in rust in this case. Like, this is just, the body has healed. And that's going to be really interesting to see. Hey, what does LeBron look like when he isn't playing 100-some-odd games at just at vicious intensity, where he's actually got to almost take a near-year sabbatical? That's gonna, and I think the answer is, given the way he trains, in the body he has, I think it's going to be really impressive. And so that's something that I would be optimistic in. In some ways, the disaster of last season for the Lakers might have bought LeBron the sabbatical a physical athlete needs at this point in his career.
People, it's time for spring cleaning, and even though I'm bad at cleaning up my house, you can clean up your teeth with Quip. It's the easiest way to change your brushing habits. Just 2 minutes twice a day, you have a healthier mouth, healthier mind, everything. And now, Quip, the electric toothbrush that changed the market for adults, has a size down kids electric toothbrush. And oh my God, getting my daughter to brush her teeth in the morning is a nightmare. Maybe she will like this. It has the same 2 minute timer and guiding pulses as the original version without any kid gimmicks. There's no princesses for the girls and trucks for the boys and all that stuff. They can brush like a grown up. Quip is just super easy to use. It has these little sensitive sonic vibrations that allow you to brush, but not too hard because some toothbrushes are too abrasive. Some electric toothbrushes even are too abrasive. It has a 2 minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds so you know when to switch sides and you brush your entire mouth evenly. You're not lefty heavy or righty heavy. 90% of us actually don't brush for a full 2 minutes according to Quip. That seems like a lot. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, so you're always fresh. It's one of the first electric toothbrushes. Quip is accepted by the American Dental Association, and they're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals. That seems like a lot, too, and they have thousands of verified five-star reviews. That's why a million happy, healthy users report to love Quip. And here's the thing. It starts at $25. When I first started reading this ad, I thought, well, this high-end electric toothbrush is going to cost $200. $25. And if you go to getquip.com/low, my last name, L-O-W-E, the name of this podcast, you can get your first refill pack free, $0.00. That's getquip.com/low.
Let's dig into the mechanics of the deal a little bit. What did you think about it from the Pelicans' perspective?
Oh, I mean,
or what did you think? What did you think of about it just from sort of an asset play perspective for either team?
I mean, again, to me, the Lakers, I can't defend, like, do I think the Lakers, if I'm doing, you know, the report card, do I think the Lakers gave up too much? Yeah, probably. Do I think they were the best, it was the best hand of poker that's been played? Certainly not. Do I think it matters in that context at the granular level for the Lakers? No. So we offer a little bit of an excuse. Like, I would not teach the Lakers hand at the Stanford Business School or whatever, you know, in sort of class and negotiation. But I think Sam Hinkie might actually teach.
I was going to say, I don't think that's on the Hinkie syllabus right now.
Yeah. So I certainly wouldn't do it from that standpoint. From the Pelicans, I love it as a rebuild. I mean, they now have they now can replenish. I mean, it's really about when you're in a market like New Orleans, it's can you get below, like, again, as we always say, what executives always say, right? Like you can acquire talent three ways, the draft, free agency, or trades, right? Free agency tends to be a very difficult proposition for a market like New Orleans for whatever reason. I don't want to debate that. Okay. So now essentially it's draft and draft. And basically every single year they're going to have, you know, a greater ability to acquire young talent on rookie deals. They have a trove of assets. If Zion Williamson is the jackpot and you want to add the second star, well, guess what? You now become that team that, you know, whenever we're speculating on who are the candidates to trade for whoever the disgruntled superstar of the day is who wants out and wants to play for a winner and a title, the answer is going to be very often, oh, the team sitting with the best collection of assets to make that kind of deal is the New Orleans Pelicans. They become the answer to that trivia question the way Boston was for years. Now, you could argue it hasn't worked as well for Boston at present time, but it got them a lot of cool stuff. Yes, Kyrie didn't work out. Like, yes, this, that, and the other. But the ability to be the team in every negotiation for several years that can be the answer to that question, which team on balance, all things being equal, has the best collection of assets at the table, is a really nice thing to be as you're trying to build a winner around a guy who at least projects to be possibly a generational talent. That's really cool. And they've done that with this deal. Do I like Lonzo? I like Lonzo more than most. I like him as a backcourt mate. They now have the best defensive backcourt in basketball, probably, unless I'm forgetting somebody, with Holiday and Ball. I'm probably in the 50th percentile on Brandon Ingram. I probably like him more than most. I probably don't like him as much as others. You know, can he be a shooter? Is it at a certain point I'm going to want to know? But I just like the ability for the Pelicans to be the answer to that question, which team in the league has the ability to move mountains to add talent.
Now, the degree to which they're going to be the answer to that question is going to evolve a lot and is totally uncertain to me. Lonzo is a divisive player going into his third season with a history of knee problems. Ingram, I'm a little higher on Ingram than even you are, and he's up for an extension already. Like, Ingram's going to get expensive one way or another, and you can say, oh, the Pelicans can play hardball, restricted free agency, blah, blah, blah. Number two picks who average 18 to 20 points a game and show some playmaking feel and some defense, even if they take a million bad mid-range jumpers and do bad by the analytics and all that, they get paid lots of money. That's what happens. They don't get $8 million a year. They get 20. So Brandon Ingram is going to be expensive. And the picks, I mean, this is the most interesting part of the deal to me, is all of the draft assets. And we cannot sit here today and say that we know the value of those draft assets because they go very far out. The Pelicans were really smart to push them into LeBron's prime and or past the expiration of his current contract, or into the end of LeBron's, not prime, like way post prime, and past his expiration, the expiration of his contract with the Lakers into 2023, 24, 25. You know, you can sit here and say, well, the Lakers won't bottom out the way the Nets did when they didn't control their own picks because Anthony Davis is 26 and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were more than 70 years old combined at the time of the trade. It's not the same thing. 100% right. 100% right. You still don't, like, we don't know how the Lakers are going to build the roster. And part of the reason why I think getting a third star is in some ways, I'm not quite convinced of this because of tradability and other reasons, but is in some ways preferable to the two or three role player route. Is it like the more stars you have, the more you fortify yourself against one or two of them being injured at the same time. And
you feel a star's talent is insurance against the downside of those picks.
I'm not sure it's better insurance than having like two or three good role players, but I do. There is part of me that's like, I mean, that was the power of the Warriors, right? Like, if one star gets hurt, we still have others ready to fill the gap, and there's only so far you can fall if, like, Jimmy Butler is the best player on your team, best healthy player on your team. But, like, you can't sit here and just pretend that there is no potential downside for the Lakers. Like, LeBron's, again, will be third all-time in minutes, all-time among all players ever by the end of this coming season. He'll be 40. In 2025. AD, look, you don't have to look very far for evidence that a misbegotten team built around AD is not that good. Now, AD is entering his prime. He'll get better. Maybe he'll grow into that role. But, like, if LeBron gets hurt one year and AD is the centerpiece of, like, a blah team, missing the playoffs.
Or if AD gets hurt. I mean, yeah, look at the top players in this league between the ages of who are at least 28 years old. The number of those players who have actually missed the majority of one season is astounding. You're talking about, now it's going to be Kevin Durant, Paul George, Russell Westbrook. I mean, like it is typical for guys who have a history of playing 2,800 minutes year after year to at some point, I mean, this LeBron and Harden are kind of the outliers here. Like, it tends to happen. I mean, we're seeing it. I mean, Kawhi, like, that's just kind of the way it works. So I'm with you. Like, the idea that the Lakers aren't exposed because, oh, they're an auto 27th pick every year is baloney.
Massively,
I mean, we just don't know. And
they are massively exposed. And to pretend otherwise is to pretend that the NBA is predictable in a way that it has proven not to be. And look, maybe the worst case scenario is one year they win 45 games and make the playoffs. Like, maybe that's as bad as it gets. And in that case, Lakers have done well. The Pelicans' assets will not be as valuable as they hope, but they have six seasons now to hope that the Lakers mess up once. They'll hope that the Lakers have bad luck once, maybe twice even, if the Pelicans get even luckier. That's not some crazy low-odds proposition, and an angle that a lot of people are missing is what just happened to the Pelicans in the lottery. They were a kind of ho-hum, decent team that missed the playoffs. They were wherever they were. I don't know where they entered. And because of the new lottery rules, they jumped all the way up to number one. The potential downside for a team that just say you just have a 41-41 year. A lot of things go badly for you. Shit happens. You win 41 games. You should win 55. You win 41. You barely miss the playoffs. You go into the lottery 12th. The chances are higher now that that pick is in the top five. And the cost of having all of that unprotected picks out of your control is higher now. And so, look, maybe here's where I come down. Maybe it all works out for the Lakers, and they're really good every year. The Pelicans end up with overpaid Brandon Ingram, overpaid Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart's fine, he's what he is, and a bunch of picks in the 20s. Maybe that's it. Great for the Lakers. Even if that happens, right now, on this day, knowing the market circumstances that the Pelicans faced, the deal is still a home run for them. To get this many bites at the draft compensation apple compared to what else was out there, and we could talk about that if you want, is three guys who could become good to very good players. It's a home run. To my knowledge, they could not have done any better.
Yeah, they also have a four this year, which probably, you know, very well could move on and not be chosen by them.
Forgot about that. They're still working that. Yeah. They're still trying to figure out what to get with that. It's TBD on that too.
So I mean that's a reasonably that's a high pick. I mean that's a real asset, and if they don't use it, they'll probably extract value for it. By definition, if they don't use it, it's because they got value for it. So that's real too. Yeah, I mean I really like it. I rebuild projects are just fun too. Possibility is fun. Hope is fun, and the fact that it's going to surround Williamson is makes it even more so. And also, like once they get past the, Etan Moore makes reasonable money for Etan Moore. I like Drew locked up because the bottom line is Drew Holiday's a really good player. He's going to be very useful to this rebuild on the fly. And if you decide he's not useful at any moment in time, like that is a tradable contract. That is a guy that a team on the edge of contention would want as a combo guard in their starting backcourt.
Yeah, that was what they have.
That
was what I was going to follow up with you because you mentioned him earlier. We'll see what happens with Drew Holiday, because it's not going to surprise anybody in the league if in months, weeks, days, I don't know, Drew Holiday's people make it known, hey, look, this is all real exciting. All these dudes are like, they can barely drink alcohol. Not that Drew Holiday drinks alcohol, but you know what I mean. Let's think about getting me to a place where I can contend for a championship. Now, I've had all these health problems in the rear view. Hopefully they're in the rear view. Like, I know how precious every NBA season is. Let's see where I can go. Like, that's not out of play in the, like, very, very near-term future. And in that case, then maybe you get even more stuff, and then you really are sitting in the catbird seat when whoever is the next crop of guys becomes a little agitated about life.
Right. And all the while you're developing Williamson, which is huge. I mean, it's such an interesting thing, like, just the way this coincided, right? Where, I mean, the Pelicans have been in the late sort of on the clock with Davis for months, and then you also got this serendipity of, okay, they also are getting Zion Williamson is showing up on their doorstep on June 24th. So, I mean, the confluence of these two events is really fun.
The luck, and it's just luck, is incredible because, you know, the Bobcats, rest in peace, tanked for one season for Anthony Davis and got Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and never tanked again because they found out it was very unpleasant. The Sixers tanked forever and got a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff. And that's what happens. The Pelicans have won they've won two lotteries, and they happen to be, through sheer luck, the two most consequential draft lotteries since LeBron was drafted. It's just like, you just can't, there's no skill in doing that. There's no skill in timing that. They just got incredibly lucky to not win the Victor Oladipo, Anthony Bennett, whatever else lottery, to not win all these other lotteries where it's like, oh, they could pick be one of a couple guys, or like, no, they won the lotteries that you would want to win. And so, by sheer luck, they're set up pretty well now, I think, right?
They're set up beautifully. I mean, I love the way the table's set.
Listeners, you know I like anything that can save me time, and SeatGeek has emerged as the go-to time saver for buying tickets to anything, NBA playoffs, any other sporting event, concerts, comedy shows, Broadway shows, more. SeatGeek has all the tickets you're looking for. It searches the entire secondary market almost and puts it all in one place that's super easy to use. It rates every deal on a scale of 1 to 10. It has green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It has an interactive seating map so you know exactly where your seat is, whether anything's in the way, all of that stuff. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It is by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. They help me get tickets to Hamilton, which is a tough ticket to get. SeatGeek will, for now, even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use the promo code I'm about to tell you about. You gotta download the SeatGeek app, use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOWE for $10 off your first purchase on SeatGeek.
How do you grapple with what's happened to Boston? Because we don't need to rehash what's happened to Boston. This has been the year from hell. They're probably going to lose Kyrie. All the reports over the weekend are accurate based on what I've heard, that their confidence is eroding, that they have any chance to keep him. Kyrie was going to be the guy that would lure Anthony Davis and pair with Anthony Davis to help them contend for years and years and years, and they would not even have to sacrifice all or most of their young core to make that happen. They did not get Paul George. They did not get Kawhi Leonard. They are going to lose maybe, probably soon, Kyrie Irving, and they did not get Anthony Davis. They did not trade Jason Tatum. They did get Gordon Hayward, who looked like a shell of himself for most of last season, and there is reason to hope that he will not look like that he will look better in year two after a catastrophic injury. How do you grapple with all this?
Let's see. First of all, maybe we get Drew Holiday there. That would be fun.
They're sniffing around, although I don't, if I were them, yeah. I would not have any sort of urgency to to make a reactive move.
No, and I hear you. So let's just, all the smoke clears, what do they have? They have a lot, right? They have Jason Tatum, who presumably can reverse his propensity for bad shots, in the right environment. So this is a really, really good two-way player with incredible size, and scoring ability and, defensive upside. That's really impressive. They have Jaylen Brown for one more year before a potential extension gets in. They have Marcus Smart on a very, very fair deal, who I think is the best on-ball defender in the league now at that position.
Ooh, I like that.
Right? So this ain't chopped liver. They've got, Hayward obviously is a huge, and Hayward is all the elasticity is there, right, is with Hayward, which is if Hayward can come back and be this, point forward, playmaking, knockdown shooter, incredible length at that position to guard about three or four different positions. People forget that he was a really good defender before he got hurt. And then, there will actually be some space depending on how sort of these extensions bear out. That, going forward, this isn't the worst thing in the world. Hayward probably won't justify his salary given the injury unless he can absolutely bounce back to pre-injury levels. Al will be gone or will stay for reduced money in his twilight. Who knows? But, I don't think it's – I think there's an argument to be made. Do you want Irving as your franchise player for the next 4 or 5 years? Do you want Kyrie? I don't know the answer to that. I know Kyrie's insanely talented. I know he's an incredible shot maker. In terms of degree of difficulty, maybe the best in the league at the point guard position.
I don't think they ever wanted him. I don't think they ever wanted him as their franchise player. They wanted Anthony Davis as their franchise player.
Right. And Irving was sort of bait. So, is this tragic? It's certainly not ideal. I just think there is room for rebound here. I think there are the conditions exist for them to sort of circle the wagons, figure out how to allocate resources really intelligently. I think they can be an elite defensive team for years to come, which you get, there are two columns, right? And they got one of them locked down. That's really good. Can they cobble together an offensive team that can help them contain? It's been disappointing. You call it a disaster. I think it's potentially disastrous, but I just feel like there is the flexibility, elasticity, and the means to sort of recover from this. I'm not as bearish as most people. Now, if the standard is, they were supposed to dominate the East for years to come. They were supposed to be in permanent ink in the conference finals every year, if not representing the East. Okay, And perhaps that's where I'm sort of missing the game here is, well, no, Kevin, they were supposed to be that team, and now they're not by any stretch. That's bad. But I think that there is a means to recover here.
I agree with you. I think Boston will be better than people think next year. I think the smart move for them is to just sort of relax. I don't think they need to make some sort of panic move for Bradley Beal or Mike Conley or name your veteran who is available. I think Conley, by the way, will move at the draft. That's among my things that I think will happen. I think they just sit tight. They have three picks in the draft. None of them turned out great. The Kings pick, again, proving what you don't know. The Kings pick was projected like nobody would have projected it to be 14th or 13th or wherever the hell it is. They have the Grizzlies pick next season, which is only top six protected, and then unprotected the year after, which is among the very best assets in the entire league, given that the Grizzlies are going to be in a deep rebuild if and when they trade Conley. I don't think that they're as bad off as people are saying. Now, you go through who they did not trade their best assets for. Jimmy Butler didn't trade for him. I don't really think that I'm okay with that.
I'm fine with that.
Jimmy Butler went scorched earth in Minnesota. There was ambivalence early on with the Sixers. I do think the Sixers will bring him back. He was very good in the playoffs. He's a great player. I don't hear a lot. I did not hear then and do not hear now any clamoring that they missed the boat on Jimmy Butler. Paul George, you heard a little clamoring then. There were cap complications because they knew they were going to sign Hayward, and that was the year the cap came in lower than projected. There was a little clamoring, not a lot, not a ton. There was not a lot of like, boy, they really missed the boat. There was some, and I don't want to downplay that. There was some. When they cashed in on Irving, and they cashed in one of the Nets picks in Isaiah Thomas for Kyrie, there was a lot of, okay, finally. And when Irving came out like a house of fire in Boston, everyone thought, and this was near unanimous, okay, Danny waited until he had a younger player under contract for multiple years at a position of need and cashed in, and boy, does it look like a home run.
Okay. Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, and anybody, they're near unanimous.
I came on and said, this has the potential to be the greatest rebuilding job in the history of basketball. And by the way, lots of general managers said that. That was consensus around the league. The fork in the road that I think they will regret is Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi.
And I ate crow on this on my podcast last week. I already ate crow. And then not only did I eat crow, I looked up the origin of the phrase eat crow, which is disgusting, as you would expect. I was too optimistic about Boston's roster this season and going forward. And I was too... You see the plan laid out before you, and they get to Game 7 against the Cavs, and they have Kyrie saying publicly, if you'll have me, I'm coming back. You know Anthony Davis is becoming available. That was known for a long time. You know you have the best package to get him. It's all sitting there lined up for you. And by the way, that's one of the reasons you don't trade for Kawhi, among many, is because you're saving that stuff to get Anthony Davis. Also, Kawhi was on an expiring deal, made it very known that he did not want to be in Boston or really anywhere other than the LA teams. Nobody knew how healthy Kawhi was. There was a huge fear around the league, including in the Raptors, that he was only going to be whatever percentage of player he was before. All of that said, I think I made this mistake. I wrote somewhere that Boston is set up to contend for 10 years because that's the way it looked. And the lesson I learned, and I think the lesson that the Celtics learned, is that you are never set up to contend for 10 years. That kind of certainty does not exist in the NBA. Things go wrong. Things go sideways. And you cannot, no matter how great it looks, you cannot fall for the idea that we are set up to be the Spurs, because you are never set up to be the Spurs.
The desires of superstars are just too capricious, right? Like, people change their minds. People who are happy decide in an instant they're unhappy. And by the way, I'm not offering that as criticism. That's all of us. I mean, the distance between somebody being happy in a job and not happy at a workplace is like a week. I mean, it happens, and it happens quickly. I mean, it's like relationships, right? Like when they go bad, they just go bad. And that's not, you don't even need that. You just need the moment a player decides, you know what? Actually, maybe I want to be elsewhere. There are options. And I just think the whims of players at this level is sort of dictates that turmoil. And again, and I don't say this as considering players, they drive the value of the league. I mean, a person is perfectly entitled to decide, you know what, I used to think I wanted to play in Boston, now not so much, for whatever reason. And, you know, so it is interesting, the Kawhi gamble, you know, sort of talking with people in Philadelphia and sort of, you know, in wondering, you know, in Boston, like, if you had to do it again, do you take the gamble? The Raptors did. And the number one factor was the near certainty by their best intelligence that guy wanted to play in California. This was a 1-year stop, and you're not going to back up the truck.
Certainty. Sort of. It is impossible to over-exaggerate a year later the certainty that Kawhi was a 1-year
certainty.
Rental. Now, and by the way, I don't want to belabor what I wrote in my Raptors win the championship column, a lot of which touched on Boston and their decision not to put Jaylen Brown in the Kawhi trade. Like, that shot rolls out and they lose in overtime, the conversation is completely different. Milwaukee wins game 3 on the road and goes up 3-0. That's how thin the margins are. That's how thin the margins are between Boston, oh, what a big mistake they made, and okay, Boston played their cards right. Like, that's how, and Boston's not even in those games, you know what I mean?
Yes. It's the randomness that dictates fortune in this league is crazy. But it is interesting. I'm not as bearish on the Celtics. Like, there's still a lot to like there. They have a lot of work to do with their young players. Like, I think, you know, it's so interesting. Tatum's a guy that you hear that, okay, he's going to be very good. There actually isn't a lot of elasticity there. He's going to be a very good player. He's not. There's a ceiling there, and there's also an amazing floor. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's not true. But, you know, there's work to be done there. Like, Tatum still has the ability to become.
I think Tatum's going to have a monster year next year. Monster.
Yeah,
I think he's going to have an all-star level year next year.
Yeah, and that's a real thing. He's a guy, you know, on a rookie deal. These guys have 2 years of service. That is not nothing. There's just a lot, I think, there to like. And if Kyrie moves on, it might end up being, again, the problem is that it's not so much that you don't have Kyrie and you might not want Kyrie. It's that, well, the planning would have been different had you known. And I think that's sort of the unfortunate part. It's not that you could have parted with Kyrie. So it's, That's sort of that's the thing. But I think they could be really, really good. And actually, you know, I mean, it's not a worst thing in the world to come with a lineup of, you know, Smart, Brown, Tatum, Hayward, Horford. That's a pretty competent basketball team. Like, I don't know what that is, but that's a team that's going to win a lot of games in the Eastern Conference.
Well, they need Hayward, as you said, to go back to being 25-5 Hayward, or, you know, 18-5-5 Hayward. And they're going to need to hit on some of these draft picks or turn them into stuff. And you know, their mid-round record, their record with mid-round draft picks, like a lot of teams, is hit or miss. But the blueprint to something transcendent is now blurry. Or non-existent, and I think it involves either Tatum or Brown or both hitting their ceilings, hitting their apex ceilings. And like, for Tatum, that's perennial all-star. For Jaylen Brown, whatever, the four-time all-star, three-time all-star, like low-end all-star. Maybe something better. Maybe that's even selling him short. I mean, a year ago, Jaylen Brown averaged whatever, like 20 in the playoffs and was an elite defensive player. Like, Jaylen Brown looked like his ceiling was higher than what I just described, a 2-3-4-time all-star. It looked better than that. So, but failing those things, like, their path to transcendence is now a complete blank slate.
Wait, this is now the 3 yards in a cloud of dust. We're going to be a top three defensive team every year. And let's let the chips fall where they may. Offensively, we have some creativity. There's enough shooting. There's not dynamic, you know, playmaking, but wow, we can make this work. Offensively, pair it with a top three defense, and you know, we're a 2 or 3 seed.
Last thing on the
AD. I'm just throwing out like possible scenarios. Yeah.
Last thing on the AD trade, because I just want to make this crystal clear. I mean, you used the phrase that the Lakers give up too much and doesn't matter. I talked about the downside and all this. Like, this does have the air of a trade where, like, the Lakers gave up one too many things in the rush to get it done. Like, I just don't. I think you can hold firm on the swap rights and still get the deal done in the end. I like it. It's just, it is vaguely Netsy. in that sense where they just said, yes, 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 what is it going to take? What is it going to take? And like, let's just get it done. It has that air to it. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Griff would have said, forget it. We'll take the Celtics offer, whatever it was, which wasn't very good. We'll make them all Paul George. We'll hold them. I don't really think that they were ever going to do that, but it does have the air of like the Lakers gave up one thing too many. And that doesn't sound like much until it's the wrong thing. That's the last thing until it's the pick swap in the year where it goes wrong, or until it's the pick deferral and the, you know what hits the fan in 2025. Like, it just, you just never know what the one thing is going to be. And it feels like the Lakers gave up one too many things.
And there will be, and that will not reveal itself for many, many, many years. Oh, I'm with you again. I can't imagine you would ever teach this in a negotiating class as being, you know, the portrait of a successful negotiation, given what the market was or not. And at the end of the day, I think it's just kind of again, the Lakers have never really, you know, let the hedge fund babies, you know, win all the trades in the aggregate. Good. You want to be Sam Hinkie or Maury? Fine. Be that. We'll be the guys who have the best talent over here. Congratulations. The business school types can celebrate. Oh, we got snowed in the negotiation. Thank you. We'll see you in late May while you can, you know, count your precious swap rights. I mean, that's kind of the Lakers thing. And by the way, I don't completely agree or disagree with that thinking. But I think that's always, I mean, the Lakers are once again truly the Lakers now, where that sort of, you know, the core competence on the granular stuff is, who cares? We've got now two top five players who win healthy, and that's really what matters. And this is the NBA. We know because our brand was as responsible for that star system as anybody. We know how it's done, and congratulations. You can tout the trades. You win the report card wars. Great. Congratulations, Pelicans. Congratulations, 2015 Sixers. Congratulations. Yeah, and I think that's generally, I think, the posture of the Los Angeles Lakers.
In any sport, coverage is everything. Do you go man or zone late in the fourth quarter? Press, full court, half court defense, whatever. The same applies to the wireless game. Coverage is everything. And with Straight Talk Wireless, you get full nationwide coverage on America's largest and most dependable 4G LTE networks, but for up to 50% less than those big carriers charge. For the exact same high-speed networks, without all the contracts, the mystery fees, or the credit checks, get 25 gigs of high-speed data for only $45 a month. It's like getting full-court coverage at a half-court price. Switch to Straight Talk Wireless and get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data for just $45 a month. Only at Walmart. Your savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com.
Let's zoom out for 5 or 10 minutes and look at the league in the wake of the Warriors' devastation, in the wake of the Davis trade. Okay. Milwaukee seems pretty a sure bet to look very much like it did last year. Toronto faces the biggest free agent question mark in the league. Philadelphia is going to be really good next year one way or the other, whether it's a full run at back or a partial run at back. Brooklyn, we'll see who they get. Indiana, we'll see who they get. And on down the line. The West is just busted wide open. And again, the Toronto's free agency question is also the Clippers' free agency question. The Clippers have a pretty instant pathway to being maybe the best team in the entire league if the summer goes right for them. Denver looks like counting on internal development. Totally fine. They won 54 games, almost made the conference finals. Portland did make the conference finals. Feels like a team that should be and will be in seize the moment mode, not stand pat mode. Utah, ditto. I think Utah is going to be very, very aggressive starting like now to upgrade its team through trades or cap space or both. I think that is almost a lock. Houston, the Warriors, the closest thing to competition for the Warriors in the Western Conference. Tim McMahon has a fantastic story about all the bickering and infighting that is so hilariously predictable. You almost like it's fantastic. The Spurs are still sitting there. The Lakers we just talked about. Pick any of these teams you want.
Thunder
capped out, but again, Sam capped Presti's out. always been bold, and you know it's all of these, like Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Steven Adams, the Portland expensive guys who aren't star players, you all their contracts, DeMar DeRozan, all of these guys would not seem movable for value, right? But they're the guys that are going to be on the market, and the league is going to just do a complete 180 in the next 2 weeks, and maybe there will be markets for those players. So pick one or two of those teams. Like, who's interesting to you? Who do you have your eye on and why?
I mean, the Clippers are obviously the most interesting in terms of upside, right? If they get Kawhi, if they add Kawhi to a 48-win team, you know, what does that portend? And, I mean, I just – to say, you know, you've got guys on the ascent in the backcourt. You've got just a lot of competent players who affect winning. And then you have Kawhi. Like could they, in certain respect, replicate what the Raptors did this year? Now, obviously, what the Raptors did was combine a bunch of really intelligent veterans on the floor together and who could all shoot and sort of make passes and defend. The Clippers probably aren't there yet. But it's hard to see a Kawhi plus a 48-win team not being in contention in a West where Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant are hurt and aren't members of the starting lineup of the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are also actually really interesting to me. Like, I mean, we've never really contemplated the question, how good is a Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and change team? I mean, is that a 46-win team? Or is it just like Steph going bananas with Draymond in contract year as the single best and most versatile defensive player on the floor? Also kind of, and you have two ridiculously good playmakers in those two guys, and they make it work. And then Klay comes back heroically after the All-Star break, and all of a sudden, oh, the team nobody wants to face in the first round, right? So
I love that team. Really, I love the team nobody wants to face in the first round. It's always a fun team to be.
That's a very fun team to be. So that's it. And, I mean, but the Clippers are interesting. And the thing about the Clippers is, I mean, and by the way, if they strike out on Kawhi, they don't have to do anything, and probably would be smart not to just gobble up whatever max guy wants to park himself in LA at age 29 or 30, whoever that might be. So, but those are two. I mean, I know it's pat to say that, oh, okay, the Warriors are interesting, but I just think I'm dying to know what it's going to look like. I mean, it's tragic, and you hate to see really great players you love watching injured, but I'm also sort of curious to see how it looks.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Steph and Draymond, because it's very clear to me Steph, Draymond, Klay, and an okay supporting cast is in the conversation to win the West next year. Like, I know that they just lost the finals, and there's a lot of mitigating circumstances in that, including Klay's injury, Klay getting injured twice in the same finals. That's a very good team. But Steph and Draymond, it's funny, I was thinking we were talking about LeBron and AD, and instantly how much synergy and how they complement each other. Steph and Draymond, I think, are in the conversation for two of the most complementary star players in the NBA, if not the two most complementary teammates. And LeBron and AD is like AD over Draymond is like it's a talent upgrade. Let's be honest. I'm interested. I mean, there are so many teams that are going to have interesting off seasons in ways that are both obvious and not. Like, I will be shocked if Utah doesn't come out of July 7th or 10th or whenever where the dust is settled without a major addition to their roster. I think Utah is frustrated by what's happened in the playoffs the last 2 years against Houston, knows they need a little bit more stylistic diversity, a little bit more juice, and I don't think they're going to wait for a couple more years of Donovan Mitchell, blah, blah. I think Utah's going to be aggressive. You agree or no?
Yeah, I think they're going to. There is going to be a dynamic playmaker in their sights that they are going to either attempt to acquire and very likely acquire. Nothing works in the playoffs offensively. You know, they make as delicious a lemonade with sort of limited offensive pieces as any team in the league, but there gets to a point where that's just a strain and there is a ceiling to what you can accomplish. No matter how good your coaching is, no matter how much, you know, your cerebral power there is on the floor, at some point you just need, you know, I mean, it's what Philadelphia determined. And it's never a thinking that I'm comfortable with. Well, you just need a guy who can just go get you a bucket, you know, like, but sometimes you just need a guy who can get you a bucket. I mean, I think there are times when when there's 7 seconds on a shot clock and you have to break the glass and you just need something that's of reasonable probability of a score, and you can't do your X cuts and all the other business. And it's just, it requires a single performer, and they need another one of those. And they'll very likely target one and hopefully get one. I'd love to see Utah kind of getting a few. I mean, that would be a fun. I want to watch the next incarnation of the Utah Jazz. I'm kind of into that. You know, Mitchell bouncing back for a really positive year, and like I'd like to see a slightly diversified, as you say, Utah Jazz team. Like that's a team I'm going to watch at 6 o'clock Pacific time.
I love Pacific time so much. I'm so jealous of your 6 o'clock.
It's amazing.
Pacific time. I know, but the Warriors finals games, they literally tip off at the same time. It's 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. To be covering them on the West Coast, it just feels amazing. Like compared to you're out of the arena at 2 a.m. on the East Coast. It's going to be an absolutely wild offseason. I'm trying to think, do you have any parting thoughts on the AD trade? Did we hit everything? I mean, this is without it, I don't think it's any, I wrote this in December. It is possibly the most important trade in the NBA since the Lakers got Kareem. Now trade, I mean trade. I don't mean free agency signing. I don't mean sign and trade that is really a free agency signing writ large, you know, glorified free agency signing. Trade. This is how big that is. This is how people, superstars as young, as tall and as dominant as Anthony Davis do not get traded. This has that potential. And like it's as prolonged as the whole saga has been, how eye-rollingly predictable it is that of course it's the Lakers that end up with him. And by the way, I think we've learned that this idea that market size and all this doesn't matter, or organizational history doesn't matter anymore, because players can get famous, this, that, and the other thing anywhere. That like, it's not just that it's Los Angeles versus New Orleans. There's lots of different factors going in, but I think that it's Los Angeles and the Lakers clearly still matters. So as eye-rollingly predictable as it is that he ends up a Laker, because every star ends up a Laker, it is going to be awesome to see LeBron with a big man like this, to see a big man who can shoot like Chris Bosh and dive to the rim like, you know, I don't know, super-duper-duper Clint Capella. LeBron has not had that kind of pick-and-roll partner ever in his career. And not only that, you can go throw the ball to him and let him create offense when you want to rest or when you're on the bench. Like that, there's just a level of very basic excitement that comes with that.
Yeah, it's a combo I'm really excited to see. And it's also interesting. I mean, the only other takeaway is just, you know, sort of now going back and kind of reading the tea leaves of last winter, where, you know, how do teams plan for, actually, now it's year 3 out of the 4 guarantees is when this might have to happen. That we've moved up the official, I'm not going to stay here moment. And how does that affect planning going forward? Does this become an anomaly? Is this the Waterloo? Will this not happen again because AD ended up having to sit? And it created all sort of turmoil and bad will, and the league doesn't like it. Or is this just going to be par for the course now, where at any moment somebody wants to pull the cord, they feel like they feel compelled to do so. And I think that's going to be interesting. This contractual nihilism where it doesn't matter anymore, right? Like I'm just not going to show up, or I demand to be traded. I just wonder, like, it's going to be interesting to watch going forward. Like, what is considered the norm? Like, are all norms gone now? And just like, hey, you know, I know I signed a 4-year deal, and I know it's only November of year 3, or for that matter, the summer before, right? Like, is there, or do teams just kind of now say, no, look, you're under contract, and does somebody, like, what happens there is kind of my question. Like, what becomes the new norm for, I no longer want to be here?
Well, we're going to keep finding out. And that's a whole discussion about player empowerment and all that for another day. But I do think we're all a little guilty of exaggerating how new some of the player empowerment stuff is. I mean, we're 20 something years removed from Kobe Bryant directing himself in the draft through his agent to the Lakers and away from everyone else, particularly the Nets. Like, you know, Kareem demanded a trade. It does feel like it's getting earlier. Maybe it's just getting noisier. And there is always sort of like it feels like it's pain for the teams that have those guys, but you do insulate yourself from the downside of letting them walk away for nothing. You do get something for them. So it's a complex question.
No, and I tend to be pro empowerment. This isn't
of course. Yeah, I know you. You're the one who wants to abolish the draft.
In terms of team building, it's interesting.
You want to abolish the draft, which takes place in 2 days.
I have a piece coming out this week about recapitulating that idea. And also, what else? Oh, I have the Vince Carter Guide to Young Ballers Surviving in the NBA on ESPN somewhere now, which includes everything from like how to talk to referees to personal hygiene. Vince made note that there are some young players in the league who don't value sort of daily personal hygiene as much as others. So
I'm more excited about that part of the story than almost any part of the story. Maybe Vince should sign with the Lakers, by the way. Maybe that should be his minimum let me go chase a ring in my last season.
That's an idea.
Why not?
Yeah. We do 19 minutes a night of Vince Carter in Los Angeles. That would be fun.
19 seems a little much. Although, given the state of their roster, it might be 19 for him or Bonga. So, we'll see. All right, Kevin Arnovitz, thank you for everything. Thank you, as always, for your time. The discussion was fantastic. And, again, look out for the Vince Carter piece and the Scrap the Draft piece coming this week. And the draft is in 3 days. Mr. Arnovitz, we will talk to you soon, my friend.
You got it.
Goodbye, Kevin. That conversation was brought to you by Pennzoil, the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.